I've gotten a couple of inquiries about student ID, because you're not regular students, you don't use it very often. So what I brought up on the screen is my registration sheet. So does anybody here need a student ID? We'll just look up your name and fetch it out. Shall we double check yours? What's your last name? Oh, okay. Well, we can double check and see if you're officially registered or not. Yeah, you got the right number there? Cool. Anybody else need a number? Okay.
I can use my student ID. They didn't want to shout across the room.
Oh, okay. Let's find that again. What's the last name?
Colopy with a C.
The C's here up top. Yes, C-O-L, yeah, right there.
Yeah. Which, it's the campus ID?
I think that's the one that's, yeah, this came out on my roster, so that should be what the university is expecting.
You said the assignment was due today. What time today is it due?
I'll be talking about that in a moment.
Because I already submitted it using my net ID instead of my student ID.
Okay. So. Probably won't make a difference as long as the TA is alert.
Can you throw Derek Thompson up there?
Yeah, let's put that up again. Are you on the list?
Yeah, Thompson and Derek.
Oh, T, okay, sorry.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Anybody else need info on the student ID? Okay, good. Another question I've gotten is exactly when today is it due? And the answer is anytime. As long as the date stamp on the file says today's date, you're golden. So 11/59/59, blah, blah, blah. In fact, this is not unusual circumstance. I was chairman of a committee, an international committee once, where papers had to be sent in. And foolishly, I just said it was due on such and such a date. And I didn't say what time and particularly what zone. So after some thinking and let you figure out why I did this, I decided that the time zone that was applicable would be the time zone in Honolulu, Hawaii. Now, I wasn't in Hawaii then. I'm not in Hawaii now. I've only visited a couple of times. But why in the world would I have chosen Honolulu, Hawaii's time zone? I think it's called, Alaska, Hawaii time or something. That's right, because it's the last major city that's likely to have Researchers University to the east of the international dateline. So that means everybody in any other place other than Honolulu is further to the east, which means it's later. So if, for example, you're in Europe, let's see, we get, I think it's 4 hours between us and Honolulu, is that correct? And between us and London, it's 6, so that's a total of 10 hours. So if you're in London, you get an extra 10 hours. You could actually do it up to 10 a.m. of the very next day, and you're still under the gun, or under the line with respect to Honolulu time. So even something as simple sounding as picking a day of when something is due gets to be a tad more complex. So anytime with today's time zone is fine. Also, people have been asking about voice recording. And I didn't even realize they were available, but I got some email from the AV expert, and they apparently are available. I guess whenever I turn on the mic, I also turn on the recording system. I think there was a president of the United States who had that problem too, that he was talking, he didn't realize he was being taped. So Fortunately, I'm a little past the point where impeaching would help me very much or hurt me very much. It wouldn't help me at all. So I guess I'm set on that. So what I'll do is I've got the files. I'll link them up. What they'll do is they'll be on the same web page as the written copies of the notes. And I think they're in MP3 format. So if you want, just click on and listen or download or whatever you want. And now I know whenever I see people walking down the hall hill with these little earphones in, you're not listening to your latest hot band. You're listening to my lecture so that you can understand material extra well. Right? Sure. Okay. So let's talk about a couple other details. I think some people had problems handing in folders. If you want to zip the folder into a single file and just hand in the zip, that's fine. The TA certainly knows how to unzip. A couple of people asking about tarring. I didn't even realize. Does System 7 support a tar application? If it does, and you know about tarring, you can do that too. Tar stands for tape archive, and it goes way, way back into Unix land. And the old Unix hackers tar things, the newer people zip, or there's gun zip and all kinds of things. But if you want to compress, that's fine. Also, I think the way that the hand-in system is set up is once you hand in, you can't take out. Is that correct? So if you want to update or something, hand in a second one, that's fine. And I'll just tell the TA, if he sees more than one time, take the latest one he sees, assuming that it's an upgrade. And probably in the README, you should say, oops, I handed in an earlier version, but I remembered to do this or that. So please ignore that one and do this one. Also, remember, you actually have up to 7 late days. So you can hand it in actually as late as a week from today. There is a penalty for that of 3 points per day. It's not a big penalty. It's more just enough to nudge you to get things done now rather than later. But I know at least one person had a situation where there was a serious family illness and that took time away from the project. So it's up to you to decide if late days should count or not. And I'll count on your honesty. If you believe you had an honest-to-gosh realistic reason why you're late, illness is certainly appropriate, job requirements, whatever. You run the lottery and you had to go out and collect your wheelbarrow full of money or whatever, which you'll share with us, I'm sure. Just say when you hand it in, yes, I'm late, but I'm excused. And you don't even have to say the reason. You say, I'm excused. You cleared it with me, and you're automatically cleared so on that. So if it's appropriate, claim it. If it's not, the penalty won't hurt you. I told one fellow, I have lottery in my mind today, that the chances of losing 3 points on the project finally affecting his final grade were roughly the chances of him winning or not winning the lottery. It's just not going to happen, or at least never happens for me. So don't worry too much about that. Any final questions about Project 1? Cool. We're getting into Project 2, and I'll be talking about that today. Also, Project 3 was just released by me yesterday, so if you go to the class webpage and want to see what Project 3 is about, go ahead and do it. I should warn you that as we get deeper into the semesters, the projects get a tad more demanding because we're doing more complex things and we're building upon the previous stages. So I don't think Project 2 is too hard, but of course I've done it, so I wouldn't think it's hard. But start on it as soon as you can, and if you get done early, look at Project 3. That one will be a tad more complex because then you'll be building not a scanner but a parser, which is a more powerful mechanism. And not only that, but you'll be building a parser which builds an abstract syntax tree. And it gets even more interesting than that because abstract syntax tree is a data structure. How do I or the TA know it's right or wrong? So the way we do that is you'll write a pass that walks the abstract syntax tree and, quote, unparses it. Unparsing means that you put it back in the original form, roughly, that the user provided, so that working the structure, if the source comes out, the unparsing comes out looking like the source, we have reason to believe the tree is correct. If it doesn't, the tree probably has problems. So there'll be more phases than this. But Project 2 is at hand. I have some extra projects, too. I handed them out last week. Does anybody need one? Okay, I see a couple there. One and I just... Just like in PS72, you can put your hand up and it'll get passed back to you or something. So recall last time we went over, actually, oh, another one, there you go. We went over the definition of the tokens, but now I can speak to actually what you're going to do. And I can say after today's lecture, you should have most of the technical material you need to actually do the project. This project is a little easier than some of the others because all you really need to do is take a working scanner, which I've given you, for CSX Lite, and I'll go over that as part of today's lecture, and transform it into a full scanner for full CSX. That means adding tokens, but the nice thing about adding tokens is you can do them one by one. So, as it says here, you'll transform a CSX Lite scanner into a full CSX scanner. The tokens that I've given you in CSX Lite are, the patterns are pretty much correct. There's, for integers, I think you have to take care of the sign. And for integers, you also have to worry about the possibility of overflowing an integer value. That is, getting a value too big to be represented by 32 or perhaps even 64 bits if we're running on that sort of machine. So you can work token by token. In fact, I had a fellow in office hours yesterday who's going on a vacation. He'll be missing a couple of weeks, poor fellow. And he was actually getting several tokens done just as we were chatting. I'll explain about that. But essentially, a number of the tokens are pretty easy. Pretty easy in the sense that if you already know how to do a plus sign, figuring out how to do a minus sign isn't that big a step. If you can do a plus and a minus, you can probably do a star, which is multiplication, or slash, which is division, or equal equal, which is comparison for equality, or less than, and on and on and on. One of the details we'll have to worry about is you're going to have to track line and column number. Why? Well, we want line and column number for error messages, for example. And if the scanner doesn't do the tracking, who all is? It's got to come from somewhere. One of the rules we're learning, there's no magic in computing. Somebody did the dirty work somewhere. Hopefully it was somebody other than you. But in terms of the scanner, you're the person that figures out, oh, I started at line one, column one, but I read this and I read that and I read another thing, and the fickle finger of fate, as it were, has moved across the first line, then down to the second, and so on and so on. In some cases, that's not entirely trivial. One of the things you'll scan is a multi-line comment. Multi-line comments, hint, hint, can extend multi-lines. How do you figure out what that is? That's something you'll need to do. But what you can do is always, as I'll show you, get the text of any token you've scanned. It can be short, like one character, or it can be dozens of lines if it's a big, fat comment. From that, you should be able to figure out exactly how the cursor moved across that particular comment. How many line feeds did I see, or new lines? Therefore, how many lines changed? On the last line, how many characters were in the last line? Therefore, where did the column go? From 1 to 2 or 10 or 20 or whatever. And you'll have to do that. That's bookkeeping. It's a tad tedious, but for the most part, it's not all that difficult. But it is something you need to do. You have to handle escapes carefully. I mentioned that before, and I'll mention it again, as it drives people nuts. It's a situation there that... Let me get my marker. What that means is if I say, for example, backslash n, is that one character or two? When does that mean the actual two-character sequence, backslash and the letter n? And when does it mean the invisible new line character? And it's up to you to figure it out. You do the magic. When it starts out, you're reading a text file, for example, backslash new line isn't special. After all, in a file system, it doesn't know that this is a programming language. This could be ordinary text. It could be a letter to a friend or something. And there's no reason why backslash n in that context is magic. But when it gets into the programming language land, it usually does become magic. And at some point, two characters that are readable change to one character that's not readable, except by the implicit effect of the cursor moving from one line to another. So we'll have to worry about that. And we'll have to worry about error cases, and particular error cases that deserve special error messages. Lexical errors are not all that common. Usually they're just of the form, you mistyped the character and you got something that can't possibly be processed properly. So for example, in our programming language, except for strings and comments, the question mark symbol is not a valid symbol. There's no question mark operator. In other languages like C or C++ or Java, it is. We just didn't need it. So if somebody types one of those, you may need to say, error, point to this character and say, this is illegal, in the context in which I'm scanning it. Other cases, things get a little nastier. So, for example, if I had a quoted string, and son of a gun, I was had a pretty rough weekend. I was out at an install, software install somewhere, or maybe I was at a Super Bowl party. Wasn't the Packers, so I wasn't at it. But you may have mistyped it, and you didn't type a double quote. You typed a single quote. Just think of all the interesting things that can happen here about this. For example, how much is going to be read? And the part that's not read, this is clearly not going to be read as a quoted string because I have a tick. But it may not even be read, probably won't be read, as a quoted character. What's worse is ABC can't possibly be a single character. So all of it is not going to be consumed. And what that means is you're going to go ahead and start scanning possibly BC as if they were input text. That means it could be changed into an identifier. But of course, it'll almost certainly be an undeclared identifier, so people are going to be confused by that. What's even worse is when I see the double quote, it may interpret that as the beginning of a new quoted string, and it may start reading until it hits end the file. That's bad. Or it hits another quoted string. Once upon a time at all football games, at Monday Night Football games, there's somebody in the crowd who had to have a Hi Mom sign, so I'll remember that. In this particular case, what the scanner might do is scan that much as a quoted string, and you never meant it to be a quoted string, and then Hi Mom become identifiers probably, and the double quote symbol gets carried along until the next match. So the upshot is, in certain cases, we may need to handle errors with some care, if only because the normal error handling is going to drive people crazy. It's going to give error messages that seem to be totally off the wall because one little miscue can lead you down the wrong path. So we'll get into that. And fortunately, these don't happen very often, but when they happen, they can be kind of embarrassing. So let me get my machine back to life. And get back to our regular lecture. Ooh, and I forgot to set my timer, so let me do that. Once I get talking, I sometimes don't stop for quite a while. Good. So what? Oh, no, that's right. Now I got to do the magic. All right. Cool. So one of the details we have in creating our scanner is that there are actually two corresponding notations that are coexisting. One I've already talked about, regular expressions. And let me talk about the other right now, and that's something called character classes. They work with each other very nicely, but they're a little confusing because they are two things that are similar but not identical. And that always is a little nasty when something's close enough you think you've got it, but it's not quite. It's the case, for example, for people who know C, when you're learning Java, there are entire blocks of code that are valid C and valid Java at the same time. But not every C program is a Java program, and for sure, every Java program is not a valid C program. So we're going to talk about character classes. And the first thing to remember about these guys is that character classes are really character sets. They're definitions of sets of not strings, which is what regular expressions do, but simply characters. The reason for that is in a lot of cases, we build strings by saying, here's a particular set of characters from which you may choose, and we'll append another and another. So an identifier is a letter. What's a letter? It's usually any lowercase or uppercase letter, so 52 different choices, followed by possibly a digit, which is possibly 10 choices. So we build upon sets of characters to build strings. So character classes are sets of characters. And I'll emphasize that as we go along. And it just turns out to be very handy in using these. In fact, those of you who know Unix or DOS have actually used character classes and not perhaps realized it. In some of the notations where you can abbreviate, for example, a file name, you have something that amounts to character classes. An example of that is, suppose I want to talk about all files in my directory that begin with a capital letter. In some cases, people use capital letters to mean one sort of file and lowercase for another. One way to do that in, I believe it works in DOS, and for sure it works in Unix, is to give a character class. And this is exactly the same in Lex and JLex as it is in Unix and I believe in DOS. This is a character class that says, give me any one letter in the range capital A through capital Z. So it includes capitals, excludes everything else. And at the level of a command line, star would mean any run of characters. Remember, I talked a previous lecture about what RM star meant and how powerful a command it could be. So this is a notion of a character class that says, I don't want to talk about just any letter, just capitals. And after that, you can have uppercase, lowercase, digits, whatever you want. Could make the pattern more complex, but this works all the time. And something that if you've used command lines at the Unix level, at Linux level, DOS level, you may have seen this. So let's go on and actually look at these guys. As I suggested, they begin with a left bracket. Let's get that right, and a right bracket. And normally you simply specify the characters you want to include, but there are a couple of operators that make life a little easier. One of those is I can use the range operator, which is a minus sign. And that's used as we use it in English in many cases, where you say from A to Z or alpha to beta or alpha to omega. You use a dash or a minus sign, which is what we call it, to represent a range. And they're simply following that notation. So the minus sign represents range. Something that's real handy is sometimes we don't say the characters we want. We say the characters we don't want. I'll show you how to handle unprintables that way. And that's done by a caret. So caret is equivalent to not. It's a little more succinct, so rather than writing NOT, which might be misread as the characters NOT, they use the caret symbol, which is kind of looks like negation, so it's not too bad a choice. And you're allowed to use backslash, and that's the usual escape. So if you have a magic character and you want it to be just the character in question, you can escape it. So an example of that, then, is I can say X, Y, and Z. And that represents not the string X, Y, Z. Remember, these are sets of characters. So this represents your choice, X, Y, or Z. I could put a minus sign in there, X to Z. It would have been still the same number of characters, but it'd be equally reasonable. And in fact, here I go ahead and do it down here. So I could have used X to Z, and they would mean the same thing. More appropriately, for our purposes, I can write down a digit by saying 0 through 9. And if I want, I can include multiple ranges. A range always works from a character, a beginning character, to an ending character. And if I want, I can have multiple ranges by simply doing that multiple times. So I can say any letter, uppercase or lowercase, is little a through little z. This is one range. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Thank you. So little a through little z or capital A through capital Z, that represents then all 52 letters, upper and lower case. We use the escape symbol, and I'll show you the next slide, so I can have special characters, including non-printables, included. So here's a case where, again, I talked about the magic. Inside of a character class, I can say backslash N, backslash T, backslash, backslash. And that's the way I get new line or tab. One of the ways to remember that is there'd be no reason for me to backslash to escape an N if I meant the letter N. I could do that as I did above with X, Y, and Z. So in that case, escaping is obviously in that context means, hey, I want a convenient way to write down this otherwise unprintable letter. Turns out there's lots of unprintable letters. So some of them may not have particular escapes. So an alternative is you can actually write down a character by giving its character code in octal. And it turns out that if you bring up a table that has all the ASCII characters, they're written in octal format as well as character format. So I could write down octal 10, and that would mean that's the character that has octal 10, which is decimal 8, in the character sequences that are available. And I think later I'll show you those when we talk about unprintables and so on, just to show you what the entire ASCII character set is. You may have seen it. It's available in documentation. I'm sure you could just Google out ASCII character set or Wikipedia it and it come up. It also turns out if you have an underlying Unix machine below you, you can do a man page and just bring man ASCII, and that'll bring you up a table too, and I'll probably do that later. As I said, I can complement characters, and let me get a fresh one. So by complementing characters, I can say everything but. So if, for example, I wanted to say anything but Y or Z, not clear why I want to do that, I can write that down there. If I wanted to say anything that's not a digit, that makes perhaps a bit more sense, I can complement a whole range of characters. And if you want, although I've never seen it used, I can say not, and in this case, it matches all characters. That turns out to be a tad powerful. There are other ways of matching characters, but when you talk about matching any character, particularly in cases where you can repeat the match, that has the tendency, or perhaps at least the possibility, to match more characters than you anticipated. And when you write patterns, that's always a problem. Does it match exactly what I want, and excluding things I don't want? And sometimes, if you make an error, you get more than you expected. When you're debugging your scanner, you may trip across that if you're a little less careful than you should be. So let's look at these character sets and talk a little bit about what it represents. Remember, how do I know it's a character class? Because it's enclosed in square brackets. So here's a case where, even though it's in square brackets, perhaps it should have been in braces. That's what they use in mathematics for set notation. But remember, braces are used in programming languages for other things like delimiters on a list of statements. So this says, give me the character set ABC, so I can have an A, a B, or a C. Ordering does not matter if I'm not doing ranges. If I'm doing ranges, it's always from the lower to the upper in the underlying character set. You say, well, I don't understand what the character set is. Well, I can show you that, but certainly there are certain principles involved, namely 0 is always less than 9 because you go in ascending order. A is less than Z, both lowercase and uppercase. And I'm not sure if I remember if uppercase comes before lowercase, because that doesn't come up. Any geniuses here remember that? You got any Rain Men or Rain Women or something? Or remember all that? Or have a photographic memory? I always wish I had that, but I don't. So the ordering does not matter. CBA is the same as ABC. I could use the range operator, and I can even repeat characters. But since this is a set, repeating characters doesn't hurt, but it doesn't help either. So in this case, AA, BB, CC is still choose an A, choose a B, or choose a C. If I'm going to negate something, not ABC is anything but those three characters. So there's, what, 128 ASCII characters minus 3. So this represents any of 125 characters. And here you can see the power of not. Sometimes saying what you don't want is way easier than listing out this and this and this and this and that and having all the difficulty of making sure you get everything. If I want to have special characters like not or dash included as actual characters, I can escape them. So this represents three magic characters, not because I don't want something negated. I don't want the range operator, so I escape the minus and says that's just a minus sign. And since a right square bracket closes the actual set, if I want to have the right square bracket in the set, I escape it saying, no, I don't want to end the character class or character set yet. Please include it as its own character. This is all characters, and this is a little gotcha. Since I put quotes around it, it is not a character class or character set, because at the outer level, you'll see the quotes, and as we'll see in regular expression notation, quoted strings normally represent themselves. So that means anything like A, B, C, with double quotes around it, just represents those characters, in this case, 5 of them. So again, that's part of the problem is that you have to be careful to say, am I in a character class or am I in a regular expression where square brackets aren't magic and other operators are applicable? So you're saying, why do I need those? Well, I'll show you some examples where having character classes makes life a lot easier than it otherwise would be by just dealing with individual characters and building those characters up into larger tokens. So that was character classes. The thing you remember there is square brackets. A couple of pages down, I'll have actually a table that compares all the major operators as regular operators and also as character class operators. In most cases, a symbol that's magic in one notation is not magic in the other. So plus, for example, is very important in regular expressions. It represents iteration of one or more times. But in a character class, it's just a plus sign. So if you have any doubt about that, I'll show you about that. And when you find that note, you might want to make a little mark on that. And when you get access to a printer, print out a hard copy of that to have with you when you're doing your programming to say, uh-oh, what do those symbols mean? Did I mistake something? What's it interpreting this or that at? And the table I give you is not entirely complete, but it's all you'll need and actually what most people actually use. So remember, regular expressions have other operators. And the three were catenation, that simply says I build a string by taking smaller strings, and the smallest string, I guess accepting the empty string, is a single character. So I can take single characters, possibly out of a character class, and unite them using concatenation or catenation, take your choice, into bigger strings. I also had alternation. That's equivalent to OR. And then we had plus and star, which really represent iteration. I can take this pattern and apply it a second time, a third time, as many times as I need to. That's the standard way of making very long tokens. You have the basic pattern and say, the body of a comment can be as long as you care to make it. The body of a string can be as long as you care to make it. The body of an integer or an identifier can be as long as you care to make it. We don't set the rules. It may be the case that there's some deep, deep rules in a programming language, but even those are pretty flexible. These days, we have so many characters that if you wanted, an identifier of 100 characters would be possible. I'm not sure anybody would want it, but it turns out occasionally you come across those, because one of the things we underappreciate is programs these days are oftentimes built by other programs. So it very well might be that an identifier is created by a program that takes all sorts of information. It might take your name, it may take your student ID number, it might make your status and make a very long identifier that represents all the particular properties that you have in one single identifier. And that might be your universal identifier. And people are worrying about that. In future, we're transnational these days. It used to be in the States that your social security number, before it became so easy to use that for identity theft, was sort of a universal identifier. That's when it got popular. Years and years and years ago, nobody knew their social security number before computers started coming along, because the only thing you used it for was social security. And what happens is, when you're young and paying into it, it don't matter, you got to pay into it, you can't dodge it, so what doesn't matter what your number is. And when you're old enough to start collecting, as long as they send you the checks, you don't care. Send it to the right address and I'll go ahead and do it. But now, going transnational, what sort of identifier can they have or can you have that crosses national boundaries? And actually, one is starting to emerge. And does anybody know what it is? Say it a little louder. Well, you might not have a passport, and it's not clear that the United Kingdom and Canada, United States and Mexico all use the same. No, it turns out to be your international phone number. And situation more and more is the case that people keep their phone numbers. And one of the things they have long term is that you can be identified through your phone number. So if you have for something like a Twitter account or something that's transnational, one of the things they talk about using is your phone number. They can abbreviate it so you don't have to put your country code if you're in the United States or something. But your country code and your area code and your number is something that is uniquely yours. And most people, do you like to keep your phone number? I like to keep mine. I've had it for years. Unfortunately, there are a few people who don't like their phone numbers and they throw them away. I had a friend who would throw her phone number away every 6 months. Whenever I'd try to call her, oh, that's the old number. You need the new number. And I don't know, she thought maybe she was a star or something where, you know, your cell phone number gets to be known and everybody bothers you. But it is an issue, and maybe people come up with something better. That's something you might have to have because you're doing medical IDs. And what happens if I have a medical emergency across the border in Canada or Mexico or Europe or wherever I might be? How do they figure out who I am quickly to bring my medical records down and to get at that? My name is obviously not enough. My passport might not be enough. I may not have it with me. Usually I have a cell phone, or is it sitting somewhere around here? Oh, there it is. So that's close at hand. So just something that we'll be getting into. So we have catenation and alternation and, as I was saying, iteration. And that's the star and also the plus operator. Remember, the difference is star says zero iterations, which means you can optionally not choose to actually take a copy of that. Plus means one or more. So in some cases, you have to have at least one occurrence, like in an identifier. It's got to start at least with one letter and then extra letters and digits, as you prefer. But other things like the sign on a number is optional. A number may be signed or it may be unsigned, in which case it's implicitly positive. So let's look at some of these, and we do catenation. Now, catenation is a little odd because there's not an explicit operator. They follow sort of mathematics, where multiplication was implicitly implied by just having two numbers adjacent. So if you remember your old algebra classes, if I say 10x equals 2y plus 3, there's an implicit There's an implicit multiplication of 10 times x and 2 times y. You don't put the operator down. You can sometimes tell if somebody's a computer scientist or a computer programmer, because sometimes they'll write down, as I do sometimes, 10 star x equals 2 star y plus 3. So I'm so used to programming it that I forget that convention. But it turns out that a similar convention is used for catenation. And if you put two expressions next to each other, they'll implicitly be catenated together. Usually that's done with delimiters like parens or brackets. But even something like this, in the context of a regular expression, would mean catenate A with B and the string CD, getting four letters. Parens are used for grouping. Remember, they disappear once the catenation occurs. So A paren, B paren, CD parens means the same thing, catenate them together. So again, it's like multiplication. Then again, I guess in mathematics, if I say 10 A plus B, that presumably mean 10 times that quantity. Again, if I put her up or you can see it. I can use character classes, but remember, character classes are individual characters. So up here, this is not A, B, C, D. Don't be mistaken by that. It's the character set A or B, one or the other, followed by the character C or D. So it represents four possible patterns, something beginning with an A or a B and also ending with a C or a D. Ordinary strings can be written without quotation if they're unambiguous. So the word while just matches itself. If I want to quote it just to be doubly, triply, quadruply sure, I can do it. And as a bit of warning, if you're writing patterns and it looks like they ought to be working and you're not sure what's going wrong, one of the first things you can do is quote everything where there's any slightest doubt in your mind and see if that fixes the problem. If it does, you're good. Otherwise, it's going to be something more subtle of a problem. But that's something that sometimes gets people. I can also have single character classes if I want. So a single W, H, I, L, E is also while. Of course, case is significant because we're doing scanning. So uppercase and lowercase are not the same automatically. Alternation is the OR operator. So I can put an OR between things. Notice that if I use character classes, they're implicitly an OR, and I'll get to that in the next slide or two. So I can write down A or B, but I can also write the character class AB. Up here, this because these are strings, I need the OR to show you where the one string begins and the other ends. But in character classes, individual characters are always of length one, so I don't need an OR operator there. In fact, be careful, if I wrote an OR operator in there, and it's certainly an easy error to make, what would go wrong? That's right. So I'd have three characters in the set, not two, the A or B, which I expect, but also the OR bar, which I might not expect. It's one of those things that may be benign, but nobody throws an OR bar at you in an identifier, but still it would be wrong in the sense that it potentially could match something that you weren't expecting. So the reason this is cool is all of a sudden we're getting close to one of the minor problems you have, but you'll still have to deal with it, namely that reserved words, along with identifiers, have mixed case, potentially. A reserved word in our language can be uppercase or lowercase. It can also be mixed case just to allow things, but it's simply the situation that in old-style programming, a lot of people would program reserved words in uppercase to differentiate them from lowercase. That's not as important as it used to be. I think Eclipse automatically does that. I think reserved words, are they pale blue or something, or some shade of blue, and your identifier is black, I think. I'm red-green colorblind, so I don't fully appreciate that. But if I wanted a pattern, and ooh, this is kind of tedious, but we'll do a little better on the next line down. I said, I want to talk about while in any combination of cases. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's 2 to the 5th different combinations that'd be possible. I could write down with the explicit alternation, or I could write down with the character classes. The advantage here is it's slightly more terse and perhaps reads a tad better. So something like this would say, I want to take any 5-character long sequence that has a W, either case, followed by an H, either case, I, L, and E, either case. And again, since these are sets, whether I put the lowercase letter or the uppercase letter first doesn't matter. I can mix them if I get bored or anything like that. It won't matter. So having talked about that, using alternation, I have that expression, which is 2 strings, A, B, or if you prefer, C, D. Parens don't change anything, just grouping to make them read a little better. This is a situation where it is different, again, because that's a character set. So it represents an A or a B, followed by your C or a D. So in this particular case, it's 1 of 4 different strings written in a clumsy way. In fact, now it's a little test it yourself. I used to have a colleague who used to love to throw little snap quizzes at people just to see who was awake or not. So we'll do a little bit of that there in her honor. Namely, if I have that expression, and it's a valid expression, what's an easier way to write it? All in one. Remember, because the OR here, I could write down A, B, C, or D. And that one is probably better because it's a little more uniform in the sense it has fewer operators for you to have to grok, if anybody remembers what grokking is all about. Certain old words come into play and go again. So, but this is legal too. It says this is an expression represents a single A or a single B. That's a single C or a single D. And I'm ORing together the singletons and I still get singletons. So that one or that one would both work equally well. It just one might be a tad more elegant if you believe in elegance than the other. Remember, we have the iteration operators, and we have one I haven't shown you yet, but it turns out to be really very handy as a way of getting around a problem that occurs a lot of times with respect to representing the empty string, which is lambda. And the best way in our expressions to write down lambda is to not write it down. But we'll get to that in a moment. So we have the star operator, which says anything that the star applies to. If you want to control what it applies to, use parens, just like you would in a programming language or would in algebra. So a star says I can have 0 matches, which is equivalent to lambda. Hey, I didn't have to write lambda down there. Or I can have 1 matches or 2. So let's do that. A, B, star. That means it's optional. So if I want, I can effectively say this could have been lambda if I had a convenient way to write lambda down. Remember, the problem with lambda in programming languages is there's no lambda key on your keyboard, unless perhaps you get the Greek one. I always wondered if you got the Greek character set. When you order these, you can get whatever one you want, whether I could actually program lambda by typing the Greek lambda there. But then I'd have all the Roman letters, which weren't there, and I'd be in trouble there. So I can do that, or I can do the string AB. The question comes up, how many of these do I want? And the answer is as many as I choose, so I can repeat it a second time, and on and on and on. Sometimes on the blackboard or on the white paper, I'll use ellipses. That, unfortunately, is not included in the lexical lex or flex or any JLex, any of those we have. So although I'll write down ellipses to kind of say more and more and more, that's not an operator. That's just a mathematical notation to remind you that this is a potentially infinitely long sequence. or arbitrarily large at least. Okay, besides star, I have plus. The difference is plus excludes the lambdas. So if I say I have to at least one, but I may have multiples, I use plus. And now the one that's really cool is you almost never want lambda by itself. Remember, lambda's invisible. And why would you want to match an invisible string? I mean, you matched it. What good is it? And more particularly, if I matched one of them, what if I match two or three or four or whatever? So matching lambda by itself is normally not what you want. Normally what you want is, as I showed up here, lambda or something. So as a cool notation and allows us to avoid writing lambda down explicitly, I have a question mark operator. It's a postfix operator, and it kind of makes sense. It says, do I want one of these or not? So instead of iterating, it says, you got your choice. You can take it or not take it, once or zero. Are your only two choices? So this essentially says lambda or, in this case, expr. An expr can be as long as you want by using parens, and say either I want one of those or I don't. So instead of writing the lambda or, and again, worrying about how to type lambda out, you simply say expr question mark. And to be or not to be, or to choose or not to choose, I guess, is the question. So in this case, you get your choice. And that is one where you probably will use in your solution. So you won't have to write down lambda. I can't think of any case where you absolutely need to use lambda. And writing lambda down is kind of difficult. In some cases, you can get by with double quotes. But that's kind of ugly, and I think it's a little less reliable because people don't use it very often. The question mark operator people do use. So, getting to that, let's take an example that shows all these operators. So this would be the one, not in our language, because remember in our language we don't use minus for negation. We use twiddle or tilde instead. But I want to have an integer that's optionally signed with a plus, a minus, or no sign at all. So the integer itself is easy, 0 through 9. That works fine. Again, be careful. When you use the range operator, it always ought to be lower to range to upper. If you do it the other way around, I'm not sure it works. So I certainly have never tried it. So I'd be careful on that. So that represents one digit. Integers have to have at least one digit, possibly more. So I put a plus on there. And minus or plus. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't escape the minus. I can. But here's a case where I don't need to. And this is where the designers are being a tad clever. Why don't I need to escape the minus in that context? Because there's no previous character. It's first character. So it's a special case. You may love those. You may hate those. Special cases exist all the time, though. I can say minus, but I could have also said, if I wanted to be doubly good, make sure I don't screw up, escape it out. But I can use a minus as the very first character. So I can say minus or plus. And I say, I'm not sure if I want a sign or not. So I could put, and then this thing. So either one of those would be a possibility. And that's pretty close to the pattern you'll be using for your integers. So mark that one down, and later on you'll have to change it slightly. You don't use the minus sign, you use the tilde. But again, there's nothing magic about tilde. So that gives you an optionally signed integer literal. We have other patterns which we will use from time to time and are useful. Certainly the top one says, sometimes I want to match a single character. In this case, anything other than a new line. And you can use a dot for that. Well, where would that be useful? And it turns out it's useful in an unexpected place. Namely, after you give all the valid token definitions, what happens about characters like the one I used previously, a question mark, as an input character that's illegal? How do you match those? Well, one way, the way I'll recommend it, is at the very bottom, after all the other patterns are specified, you put a dot saying I'll match a single character, anything other than a new line. We don't worry about new line because new lines are matched by other patterns that candle white space. So when you see a tab, a blank, or a new line, you match it and say this is just stuff between valid tokens. Got to match it just to get the scanner past it, but I don't return a token for it. So a new line by itself will be taken care of. A single dot says, I'll match a single character. Well, hey, let's get clever. Suppose I had something, and again, I said, what's another illegal character? Well, I think percent sign in our language is illegal, except in strings and comments. So suppose the guy decides to put three of those down there. I say, oh, I'm going to handle that one real good. I'm going to give him a great error message. I'll do something. No, not star, plus. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? It's probably a bad idea. Years and years ago, there was an old TV show that always used to talk about the monster that devoured Cleveland. Well, this is not going to devour Cleveland, but suppose I have some other stuff here. Like a valid program. And I say up here, situation here, would it match this guy? It'll match this guy and it'll match that guy, but it'll keep on matching. That's the reason, by the way, why they don't include the new line in there. If this thing included everything, including the new line, this would be really dangerous. It'd be a situation, one of the latest versions of Godzilla or something, where it comes and is knocking down everything in sight, because it would match this, this, this. We haven't gotten to the details yet, but I have alluded to the fact that we have a notion of the longest match possible. If two tokens match and one is longer than the other, the longer one is matched. Why is that? Well, suppose I had equal and double equal. And in fact, we do. Equal is assignment, double equal is comparison. If I didn't have this rule about longest match, I could never get the comparison operator double equal matched. My scanner would say, oh, that's an assignment followed by an assignment. And later on, the parser would say, no, you can't have that. That's the rules of language don't allow two assignments. But the scanner does not know that. Remember, when we're doing the scanning does not know anything about syntax. And I'll remind you about that, because sometimes people, when they're doing testing, say, well, I don't know what valid CSX programs look like. Doesn't matter. Write down anything you want. As long as the tokens are valid, the program may or may not be valid. The parser will figure that out, but we're not at the parser yet. So the scanner can scan more than valid programs. All it worries about is valid tokens. So this would be bad if I had something like dot or new line. If I ever put that in there, what would happen when I started to try to scan the very first token? It wouldn't scan anything. So notice if I had that, it would say, this matches anything but a new line, so that thing in parentheses is any single character. But remember, we have the longest match property, and the longest match would be every character you've typed into your program as one long, humongous, illegal token. Well, if it can't match anything, because it considers everything an error, that's probably not the most useful program around. So these guys exist, but they got to be used with some care. And typically, we put them at the end of the program so everybody else gets a shot of a valid match first. And we don't put the iterator on there, even remembering that this guy is going to say, illegal character, illegal character, illegal character. Doesn't happen often enough that I'm going to lose any sleep on it, but that's why. If I start iterating on that, I may end up eating more of the program than I ever wanted to, and I simply have to avoid that. We have a couple of other context characters, too. And we haven't gotten to this yet, but we will shortly, that sometimes you want to match up to something, but don't want to match the character itself. And a great example of that is, suppose I want to match on a line the longest possible sequence of characters that comprises a single line. But here's the issue. I don't want the new line. Remember, the new line is a separator. So I'm saying I want to match everything up to a new line, but not the new line. Somebody else can handle that. I could match more than I needed to, but then I'd have to worry, is there some way of saying, well, I didn't want the new line, but maybe somebody else did. So what you're allowed to have is a context character, and you have caret. This is used not as a not, that's in character classes, but that's used as a pattern for a start of a line. And particularly dollar sign can be used as a context character to the end of a line where it says, I'll match everything up to, and I have to see the new line character. But I'm not going to match the new line character. Let somebody else do that. And we'll see sometimes that's a situation that you have to read a little bit more characters than you want to realize when you've read enough. So that's the situation. You know when you've had enough is what they say when on all these beer commercials or something. So they show all these people partying like crazy, and sure, they know they've had enough, right? So situation. But it's a situation where actually scanners do that more often than you might imagine. That is, not drink too much, but in this case, scan too much. So suppose I had something like B, C, D, minus 10. And I just start there. So remember, the notion is I want an identifier to be the longest sequence of characters. So I read the B, read the C, and read the D. But guess what? You don't have to worry about that, thankfully, because the scanner's programming this for you. But the scanner has to read even more characters than the B, C, and D. And why is that? Because it doesn't know what the next character is. Maybe the next character is, you know, just think of it as, you know, you have a little, get a clean one, got one here. You have a little moving cursor. So it says, this is what you said, read so far. You've read a B. Am I done? Don't know. Got to give another character. I can't tell. Got to read the C. No, I'm not done yet. B, C is an identifier. So it was a good thing I read another character. Read another one, D. Am I done yet? Don't know. Finally, I hit minus and say, uh-oh, wait a minute. Minus can't be part of an identifier in our definition. So it says B, C, D was it. This is what I got to return. But hey, I've read the minus. Now, some systems allow you to unread characters. I can do that. What scanners more likely do is they have a little buffer of characters they've read that weren't part of the current token but have to be processed pretty soon. So they have characters that have been looked at but not read. So if you have roommates, for example, maybe it's occasionally the case that you have a letter and you open it up and say, oh my gosh, this is not for me. This is a bill. I don't owe any bills, and it's my roommate's, and I accidentally did it. So you kind of tape it up and say, oh, roommate, I wasn't peeking at your mail. I just accidentally saw that you were. Accidentally saw that you were a few months overdue on your whatever it is the bill is. Is that back? Yeah, that's good. That's one of the good things. At your age, a lot of people are getting student loan bills. Fortunately, you're in a situation where you'll have them paid off very soon, if not already, and that's a great situation to be in. So we have those context operators. You may not need those. It may come in handy, but if you had a situation where you wanted to read up to something, but you didn't want to consume that character, and the most common ones are the cases of new line and beginning of line. There's also a context operator, which some languages use, we don't need to, that allows you to generalize that. So you can say, read me an identifier, but it's got to terminate with maybe semicolon, new line or something. You wanted something at the end of a line, semicolon, and then a new line. And you'd be able to specify two context characters rather than one. Our language is designed not to need that, but older language or fancier languages may have that problem, and we'll talk about that. One of the things certainly is up in the air is how flexible scanners should be. One great example is, it used to be in the old days that file names always had to be a special sequence of characters excluding blanks. So I could have a file that says my music. But I couldn't write it quite that way. I had to perhaps put an underscore, or sometimes you would be allowed a minus or a dot or something else. And certainly the earliest versions of Unix had that issue. Nowadays, of course, file systems allow you to have embedded blanks. Well, say that's cool, because now my music looks like my music. But in the larger context of something of situation of scanning for a program, not just the file name, so suppose I had a programming language that allowed identifiers to do this, and my notion here is that I want to take all your music and put it on my system. You got great music, and I want to have it just so I know what is there. Notice that this gets a little dicier. In fact, some of the early programming languages have that issue, and it was a situation, ooh, don't go to sleep, where you could misinterpret what a program meant. The issue here, of course, is suppose it's not just my music, but it's something that's a reserved word, like end is reserved in many languages. End music. It's music to be listened to at the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the party, or whatever. Just think of the fun the scanner is going to have trying to decide, hey, did he mean end as an end of a program in conventional ways, followed by music gets your, and it doesn't even know this other music is here, or did he mean end music, effectively putting an underscore there to make it one longer identifier. If that's the case, the longest match rule says this should not be end like a reserved word end, but end music as one identifier. And the more of this you allow, the trickier things get. So that's one of the reasons why this notion of having embedded blanks in the middle of identifiers has not propagated to programming languages very much. Is it allowed in your programming language and your own in-house language? What is it, cache, is it? Does cache say yay or nay? Nay, okay. I'm going to learn about cache. That's some situation here. Outside of Epic employees, I'll be one of the few people who caches in public or whatever it might be. So I've been alluding to this, and now's a good time to get to it, is that regular expressions are allowed to overlap. Now don't minimize this, because normally having overlap is the kiss of death, because now he says this could be right or that could be right. And particularly if I have a scanner and I want to add to it, historically, the problem is if I added something to an existing scanner, the question is, well, does it conflict with anything that already exists? If I add a new reserved word that begins with I, does it conflict with if, which already exists? I have to go in there and check, see how they interact, etc. The nice thing about automatically generated scanner is there's a couple of very simple rules that say, I don't care if they overlap. If they overlap, I'm going to give two rules that say who wins and who loses. And this is just not two defs. It could be three or four or as many as you have. So that means automatically you have patterns that overlap. A reserved word overlaps with an identifier. You want to make sure that reserved words win, because the rule is if it looks like a reserved word, it is, even though it could also be an identifier. So you have to make that come into account. We also had that example I showed a moment ago of single versus double character symbols. If I have equal in there and some great genius says I want to add in a double equal, how do I make sure that adding the double equal does not somehow destroy single equal? Or maybe start getting some error messages. If I said equal 10, it says, wait a minute, equal 1 is an invalid token. Well, sure it is, because I didn't mean equal 1. So anyway, it's break time, and I think this is probably, yeah, this is a good time. We'll go back to that. It's 6:30, so we'll resume again in about 15 minutes, quarter of.